All right, well, good morning. When I was a junior in high school, I grew up in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It was a great place to grow up, right at the foot of Pikes Peak. But we all have a culture in our family, right? So the culture of my family was, on the most part, athletics. A little bit of academic. We had to go to school. They made us go. And my dad happened to be not only a teacher, but he became a principal of a high school in Colorado Springs, so school was a big deal. And my mom became a teacher, so education was a big deal. But athletics was a big deal, too, in my family. So we all played a lot of sports, so football, basketball, baseball, the whole time. So I'm a junior. I'm playing on the basketball team on the varsity at the high school I went to, which, you know, you're getting older when Wasson High School doesn't exist anymore. You know, like, it's really a bummer, you know, like, oh, yeah, they closed it down because that part of town got so old, there were no more kids coming to the school. So, yeah, that's just really weird, I think. But so I'm playing on the basketball team, and I wasn't a great basketball player. I wasn't bad. I could dribble. I could shoot. I didn't shoot very well, but, you know, I was on the team. And at the end of the season, I'll never forget, the coach comes up to me, Coach Woodward, who's this guy who's about 6'7", total tight crew cut, you know, I mean, you know, and I mean, he's like a no-nonsense kind of a guy. And he's huge. At the end of the season, he said, hey, Kevin, you're going to get a lot of playing time next year. So, you know, let's work at this, man, because you're going to get a lot of playing time. And so that was fun to hear. Unfortunately, I don't remember touching a basketball for the rest of the year until season came around. I delegated all of my athletic time to football. And it turned out well because we were state champs in football my senior year. And so that was fun. And then I show up for basketball, and I hadn't touched a basketball. I mean, I hadn't even touched one. Guess what happens in basketball if you don't touch a basketball? You don't get better. You know, the reason LeBron's so good is because he touches the basketball a lot. You know, he's like sleeps with it. You know, it's under his arm. But I wasn't very good. I didn't get any better. And so I sat the bench a ton during that part. And eventually, about halfway through, I decided this maybe isn't very smart. This maybe isn't very wise. I'm going to graduate. I'm going to go to college. I probably, to be a responsible young person, should get a job and start making some money to pay for college. And really, all of this sounds good, right? And parents are going, yeah, you're starting to think correctly. And so I thought, well, I should probably quit. You know, I should probably be more responsible. And that was really my heart. I wasn't angry with the coach. I knew I hadn't gotten better. I knew I wasn't, didn't belong on the court a ton. In fact, when I did get on the court, they called me the enforcer, which was really just taking my football experience and putting it on the basketball court. And they put me in when someone needed to have a little bit of physical contact. And so I would go in, and sure enough, I'd get two or three fouls fairly quickly, and they'd pull me off the court, and they'd say, hey, great job. You did what we asked you to do. And I'm like, okay. But eventually I thought, you know, I probably should do something to prepare for next year. So I remember after practice on Wednesday, I decided to take all my practice gear home, and I washed it up, and I made it right. And on Thursday during school, I went down to Coach Woodward's office, and I said, Coach, hey, I'm not mad or anything like that. And in fact, this coach knew my dad really well, so, you know, it's all close. And I just said, hey, I just think I probably, to be responsible, should get a job. And so I think I need to turn in my gear. So I turned in my gear Thursday during school. And so therefore, I didn't go to practice Thursday after school, which was, like, totally weird. That might have been the first time I never went to a practice after school my entire high school career. It was either football, basketball, or baseball every night after school. And I liked that, you know, so I went home. I had no idea what to do with myself, except I needed to go look for a job. So I drug myself downtown, and I started looking for a job. I went place to place applying. I even went to this really cool clothing place called Lee's Clothing. No one ever knows Colorado Springs, but, like, that is the coolest place in town. And I went in and applied for a job. And I thought, okay, you're being a responsible adultish kind of, sort of, you know, and I was sucking it up. Well, then on Friday, we had basketball games Friday and Saturday night. So on Friday, it was an in-town game over at Mitchell High School, which was our rival. And I went to the game, and I went with my girlfriend, Kathy, nice gal. So we went to the game, and I sat in the stands for the very first time my whole life. I sat in the stands with Kathy. And I was so bored. And now, she was a nice gal. It's not about her, right? I was so bored. I just kept thinking, all I want to be is down there. That's all I want to be. So I was just like, ugh, I don't know if I like this. And I looked for a job, that day before the game. And then the next day on Saturday, it was an out-of-town game. We played Pueblo East. And for the very first time, I wasn't on the bus. And I'd been on the bus 100 times. I loved being on the bus with those guys. We did all sorts of stupid, silly, crazy, inappropriate things on the bus, you know? And we had so much fun. And I wasn't on the bus. I hated it. And then I'll never forget, after the game, we always went, they took us, finances were bigger then. They always took the team to China Lantern in Pueblo, Colorado. And in China Lantern, you got chicken fried steak. I don't know exactly why chicken fried steak at China Lantern, but that's what it was. And so, man, I love chicken fried steak. You know, it was just like, and I missed that. And I think I went out on a date with Kathy that night, and I was just like, felt like a fish out of water. I hated it. And so Sunday came, and then Monday, I went through that, and then Monday came, and I don't know what possessed me, but I wanted to be on the team. It's really what I wanted to be. And my mom and dad weren't pushing me to get a job. They said, do whatever you need to do, whatever. And so, like an idiot, or almost presumptuous, I went down to see Coach Woodward. And I stood in front of his desk. I'll never forget it. His big desk, he's sitting right there. And I have to say, hey, Coach, I don't know if this is possible, but I'd rather be on the team. Is there any way I could do that? And I'll never forget it. You guys, one of the biggest moments of my life. I'll never forget it. He reaches over, and he opens the drawer of his desk. And he reaches in, and he pulls out my practice gear. And he hands it over, and he says, I knew you'd be back. Get dressed. Suit up. I was like, yes. I mean, I yes, sir. And then he says this, and it was proper. It was fair. He says, well, you missed practice on Thursday, right? Well, yeah. He goes, you missed two games, right? Yeah. He goes, you owe me 30 stairs. And so it's three flights of stairs in a gym. So those are big flights. And you owe me 30. All the way up, all the way down is one. You owe me 30. You know, and I'm like, I'm thinking inside, that's a lot of stairs. And he says, and don't be late for practice. So you better get dressed up and you better hurry up because you owe me 30 flights of stairs and then come out to practice. And I'll tell you what, I have never enjoyed running stairs so much. I was so fired up to be back on the team, and he just says, suit up. And you guys, that's exactly what we're doing here. Is this summer we're going to talk about suiting up for the game. And the game is a significant game. And that's what we're going to talk about the entire summer. So let me just ask you a few questions. We talk about suiting up for the game. This is all going to be about spiritual battle and a spiritual warfare that goes on. And you guys, I'll gotta be honest with you. This is not an area I love to talk about. This is not an area that we talk about very much. This is not an area that you go to seminary and you take a whole seminary career. And I think we talked about this for a few class periods the entire time. And so, you know, it's not really a comfortable deal. So let me just ask you a few questions. Here's one. Do you sense that there is a battle being waged for your heart and your mind? Do you sense that battle? It's sometimes subtle, but sometimes not so subtle. Do you sense a battle for your heart and for your mind? Kind of a spiritual battle beyond just the physical, kind of in that transcendent world that's kind of the non-physical, but this incredible spiritual place. Do you sense a battle for who you are? Let me ask another question. Do you have any idea how to engage that conflict? This spiritual battle. Do you have any idea how to engage that conflict? Because we don't talk about it much. Western Christianity doesn't talk about it much. Do you have any idea how to engage that battle? Maybe a third question. Do you believe in a literal Satan who is a supernatural deceiver, hater, liar, murderer, and accuser? Do you believe in a literal Satan? Let me just read you a part of a news article from the New York Times by a guy named Gustav Niebuhr. The title of it is Satan Real? Most People Think Not. Let me read it to you. Polls tend to show that Americans are largely religious people, with something close to 95% claiming a belief in God and large numbers saying they believe that heaven exists. And so do angels, they suggest. They go, yeah, I think I all believe that exists. But listen to this next paragraph. But the people who respond to those polls appear to have an easier time personalizing religious concepts of good rather than evil. Events like the Salem witch trials, notwithstanding, we can kind of reject all that, but this is a nation inclined more to theological optimism than to pondering literal representations of faith's dark side. I think that's true. I think it's true in me. I think it's true in most people I talk to. We kind of want to hang out on the optimistic side, the good side. We're like, let's believe in God, let's believe in heaven. You know, yeah, I buy all that. But all that other stuff, I don't know if I really want to relate to that. Look at the rest of this article. For evidence, one might look to a recent finding by the Barna Research Group, a market researcher out of Oxnard, California, who reported last week that nearly two-thirds of Americans do not believe in the devil as a living entity. In a nationwide telephone survey of over 1,000 people, randomly selected people earlier this year, Barna's pollsters asked whether they agreed that Satan is, quote, not a living being, but a symbol of evil. 62% agreed with the statement, while 30% disagreed, and the remaining 8% had no opinion. The results echo a survey Barna did 2 years ago in which people were asked whether they thought hell existed as an actual location, a place of physical torment. Only 31% said they thought it did. You know, frankly, the numbers are even lower today of what people believe in that actual dark side of the faith world. And that the battle that might exist between them. Like, wow, okay. Well, let me ask a couple other questions. Do you experience a wrestling within you about right and wrong and what to choose? And that sometimes it's a little bit bigger than just yourself? Do you sense that? Last question. Do you struggle with some habitual sin without victory? Is there something in your life that you struggle with that you seem to not be able to get the upper hand on, that is eating away at the vitality of your soul? Is there a habitual thing that somehow has become a part of you, has grown its roots deep inside of you, and it's really undermining the things that you really want out of life and maybe what God has for you? Is there the reality of this battle that goes on in your soul and in our world? Let me just suggest, here, let's go to this next slide. Here, I'm going to draw a dotted line across here. And I'm going to suggest that there is a spiritual reality in our world that exists on two levels, one above the line and one below the line. Okay? And so what I mean by that is below the line, let's go to this next verse. Below the line, there are three areas that the scriptures tell us that we battle with in the reality of our world, where we live, where we see, what we can touch, what we can do. The first one is a battle with the world itself. The kind of the external solicitation of us. There are externals in our world that solicit us, that kind of grab us, want to draw us in, are kind of saying to you, what about this? And we battle with those things. There's a world system that really wants to do that. Secondly, that there's what we call the flesh. The scriptures talk about this is kind of that internal solicitation of our soul. The things inside of us, well, inside of me, this is what I want. I want to be in control. I want to do it. And we have this kind of inside of us, this broken place in our flesh. And third, an area we don't really want to talk about very much or relate to is the devil himself. If there is a devil, if there is a Satan, if there is a Lucifer, then what does that look like? And in fact, that's real. Now, I got to be honest with you. Probably growing up, and most of my life, I'm not a guy that kind of sees Satan behind every bush. I don't. I think sometimes that goes way beyond what we should be doing. But I've never really, you know, like this idea of Satan or devil or demons. They're like, I don't know. I'd hear things, maybe read things, but seldom see things. And I still haven't seen a ton of that. But I will have to be honest with you. I've begun to see much more. I've begun to see, if you go to Haiti, you see an incredible place of spiritual battle, an incredible place of the demonic presence, as voodoo is a major element of their culture. And to see the incredible things that happen there and can be done there out of an incredible evilness. And it's a little stunning. It's a little uncomfortable. Frankly, we don't know exactly what to do with it sometimes. One of my trips back from Haiti, I sat next to a gentleman in a really nice three-piece suit. And I kind of like, well, man, what are you doing? Because most of us don't dress all that great going to Haiti. And he's like dressed up. And I go, what do you do? And he goes, well, I work for the United Nations. And I said, really, what do you do for them? And I said, I'm in charge of the United Nations Police Force for North Africa and the Caribbean. And I said, well, okay, what's the United Nations Police Force? I don't understand it. I've heard of the Army. And he said, well, we're the police force that comes in to help local police deal with situations that are beyond their capability. But if it gets a lot worse, we send in the United Nations Armed Forces. But we're the police force. And I said, oh, really? Okay, well, that's interesting. And I said, well, you know, what'd you think? You're here in Haiti. And he goes, it's my first time. And I said, well, okay, what'd you think? And he goes, this is a wild place. And I said, really? Like what? And he said, well, let me just tell you three stories. He said, this week we dealt with one group of people who chased down a prostitute, and they took machetes and they chopped her to pieces, literally to pieces. I'm like, oh, wow, that's a little harsh. And then he said, let me tell you another one. This week we dealt with the guys who wanted to get to some of the people that they work with, this one guy especially. And they went to a voodoo witch doctor and they said, hey, we want to kill this guy. And he said, I'll tell you what, you go get his shirt out of his closet for me. And they brought it back to him and this voodoo witch doctor soaked it in poison. And then he said, he ironed it and then he said, go put it back in his closet. And the next time he wore that, he was dead by noon as the poison soaked through his skin and killed him by noon. That is evil. Just so you know, that is pure evil. So let me tell you another one. We had a guy this week who was a two-bit robber, thief, and he had done a bunch of things, and so we found him in a house, and he wouldn't come out. He was in there with a bunch of people, and so the police force, not the United Nations, it was simply the Haitian police force, just took machine guns and they began shooting through the house. And they shot so many bullets, the entire thing collapsed on itself and killed 30 people at one time. And I'm going, okay, these are things I'm not familiar with. These are things I'm not very in touch with. These are evil at a level that I don't relate to very often. But is there a real evil in the world today? And you guys, I don't think we like to assign it to Satan and the devil. I don't like it. I'm not real comfortable with it. But as I read the scriptures, I see the reality of the demonic. We'll talk about that. But then, this is kind of all below the line, right? But then there's another box above the line. Places we can't see. Places we're unaware of. In the heavenlies, a spiritual battle at a level. And that's where you go, okay, what's that all about? Well, let me just go back and kind of connect where we've been to where we're going, okay? And let's go to Ephesians again. Remember, we've been talking about the Spirit-filled life and the need to be filled with the Spirit. We spent a long time talking about that. Let's go back there, and let me just kind of bring us up to speed and connect it. So in Ephesians 5, it says this, verse 15. Look carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are not just weird, not just difficult, not just interesting. He says the days are evil. Wow, okay. Therefore, don't be a fool, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And don't get drunk with wine, for that's just debauchery. And he's using it as an illustration, right? Don't fill your life, don't empower your life, don't direct your life with wine or any other destructive substance, whether it be literal substance or filling your lives with whatever. He says that just is crazy. But be filled, controlled, and empowered, encircle it, be filled with the Spirit of God. That what he wants to do in your life is so much more amazing than what the world wants to do in your life. He says, be filled with the Spirit. And then look at the results here of being filled with the Spirit. Verse 19, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Addressing one another out of the richness of the reality of the presence of God. That we would interact about his beauty, his awesomeness. We would share that with each other. That's all it's saying. We don't have to walk up and sing to each other. That'd be cruel and unusual punishment if I did that to you. Okay? But to address one another in the beauty of who God is in some beautiful way. Encourage one another with who he is. That's what fellowship, koinonia, is all about. That we would share a real God with a real you in a real world, and that we would fellowship about that. That's really what it's talking about here. And then it goes on, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, having a heart of joyfulness. That's as a result of being filled with the Spirit. The next one, look at this, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, having a heart of thankfulness, giving thanks in all things, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. To not only, because he's working out his will, being thankful, even in the tough times. And then, let's circle it here. Last result of being filled with the Spirit. Submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. Submitting means this. It means to defer to each other and to offer myself to each other. Both, right? I'm willing to give up and I'm willing to offer myself. And so, and in the three areas that the scriptures talk about here are husbands and wives submitting to one another, offering ourselves to each other, and deferring to each other. Saying, you know what, let's do a win-win here, can we? Can I recognize God working in my wife? And that God working in me, and together he's put us together. And marriages are falling apart left and right, and they're hurting, and they're painful. And yet, how can we submit to another out of reverence for Christ? And then he applies it to parents and children. Hey, moms and dads and kids, work it out, will you? Yeah, don't frustrate your kids unnecessarily. And kids, honor your mom and dad. Don't fight with them. Guess what? God put them there for a reason. And they're not always perfect. But to honor them. And he says, and it'll go well with your life, just so you know. It goes well. And then the last one, he talks about employers and employees. Employers, don't be harsh to your employees. Employees, don't try to take over the boss. He's the boss. Let him be the boss. But live out who you are in Christ. Well, that's what it talks about the rest of Ephesians. Then look at this. In Ephesians 6, verse 10, finally. Now, it's kind of a final thing. So it's kind of the last quality of the Spirit-filled life, but also the first quality of the end of this letter. So he says, finally, be strong in the Lord. Be strong in him. You see, the Christian life is not a difficult life, right? I've told you before. It is not difficult. It is impossible. Because we can't do it on our own. But he says, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might, of his power. Be strong in him. And then it says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes, the trickery of the devil. The way he lives it out, both in the demonic world, in the area of our flesh, in the area of a world system, he says, put on the whole armor of God. Here's the fascinating thing. I love this. That word whole armor is actually one word. We have to put it into two words because we'd say put on the armor, but he says, I want you to put on the whole armor. Well, actually, that word whole armor is one word. And here's what it is. Best on these really cool drawings. The whole armor of God. This has a name. The whole thing is as a Roman soldier. This whole unit has a name for it. And it's one name. So, and we have to say the whole armor. But what it means is put on the armor, put on every piece. If you don't put on every piece, you're going to be really left vulnerable. You got to put it all on at one time and be ready for the battle. And here he's telling us, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Okay, now you guys, look at this, verse 12. Circle it, highlight it. Let's look at it for a second. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. Actually, in the Greek, that's how it reads best in the English. Actually, in the Greek, it says, We do not wrestle with blood and flesh. It's flipped. And so he says, we don't wrestle against just what we see here. We wrestle with things that are bigger than that. But, it says here, but against the rulers, and he's going to kind of build up here. It's going to be kind of momentous, if you will. It's going to be against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness. The cosmic powers is actually one word also, and it describes that which wants to take over the universe. It's a cosmic reality above what we see that tries to take over the universe. And this is like big stuff, right? Paul's vision here is giant as he's writing this, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness in which we live. Against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. That there is a presence, a reality of evil in this universe, in the heavenly places, and it includes here, that's very, very real. Most of which we have no idea what it looks like and what's going on there. We get glimpses in the scriptures. We get glimpses of it, but we don't see the whole thing. So when we go back to this little diagram, we find that not only do we struggle with the world and the flesh and the devil, but we struggle with spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places, beyond our comprehension, beyond our seeing. And it's happening right now. Now, I don't know about you, but that kind of blows my brains. You know, I was like, whoa, what's that all about? Well, let's go to verse 13 and we'll come back. It says, therefore, take up the whole armor of God. The whole thing, right? Put on the whole thing. We have a guy over here. We have a gal over here. Put on the whole thing. That you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all of it, having put on it all, and having stood firm, he says, stand firm. So I love it. In most of this armor, there's only one piece that's offensive. The rest of it's all defensive. But he says the goal of the Roman soldier was to stand firm. So if you're an athlete, you know, or been in athletics, you know, you say there's a stance you take. You know, if you do some sort of martial arts, there's a stance you take to get ready, to make yourself strong and in a foundation. If you're a linebacker, you don't just stand there like this and think, well, okay, where's it going? You stand like this, you are going to get killed, you know? So if you're a linebacker, you like get down, you know, and you're like ready. And when it comes, you're going to be ready to move into something. You get your stance strong. A Roman soldier would take his sandals, and they had 100 nails on the bottom of it, like cleats that he would dig in and be ready to stand firm to be a soldier. He says, here, I want you to stand firm. But you cannot stand firm unless you put on the whole armor of God. It's not possible. So here's what we're going to do the next 11 weeks, just so you know. Next week we're going to talk about, next slide, we're going to talk about the spiritual forces of evil in the places that we can't see. And we'll try to look at, okay, what do the scriptures tell us about what's going on there? Okay. Then the following week, we're going to talk about the world and about, as it says in 1 John, that what we have from the world is the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life. That's what it gives us, what we buy into. The next week, we're going to talk about the flesh, that there's nothing good that dwells in my flesh. Nothing good exists there. We'll talk about that. How do we fight back? How do we relate to that? How do we understand that? Where is it killing us? Where is it getting us? The next week, we're going to talk about the devil, the adversary. Because in 1 Peter, it says, your adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Is that true? What's that look like? How do we fight it? And then the following weeks, we're going to talk about the pieces of the armor. The first time, we'll talk about the belt of truth. Why does he name it first? Why is it so critical? Then we're going to talk about the breastplate of righteousness and how that protects the most vital organs of your spiritual being. The next week, we're going to talk about those sandals or being shod, having shoes with the gospel of peace and why that's important. The following week, we're going to talk about the shield of faith that extinguishes all those fiery darts that get shot at us. The next week, we're going to talk about the helmet of salvation and why that's so critical on our head. And the next week, we're going to talk about the sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, the only offensive weapon that we have. We're going to talk about those things the following weeks. And then the last week, this passage is going to kind of unfold into the critical undergirding of everything in prayer and why that's a critical piece of all this thing. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you to suit up. Just like Coach Woodward when he said, hey, suit up. But you say, right on. But I'll take it, I'm going to stand firm, put on the whole armor of God in the spiritual battle that we have. So let me give you just a few warnings before we close. And I think these are important, okay? Just a few warnings. First of all, by addressing this, it will not necessarily increase the spiritual battle, though it might. A few years ago, as we were standing, his kind of quest was in the process of being evaluated whether it should be moved as a church plant. I remember standing in the auditorium back at First Free, and I was standing right over, the room's almost exactly this size. I was standing right over here, about where John is. And it was kind of like, well, this could be, maybe there should be some conflict over this. And I said, I remember saying it, God, bring it on. That was the dumbest thing I've ever said. I regret saying it. That was so cavalier, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm ready, you know. Oh my gosh, was I not ready for what was going to happen. And so I have no desire here to say, all right, bring it on. I'm not interested. But I also know that I can't avoid all the spiritual battle of life. Life happens. And so I want to stand firm with the armor of God. And so I do want to say, as we address this, it may or may not increase the level of spiritual battle in your life. But you will probably become more aware of it in you and around you the more we talk about it. God seems to then begin to show it to us. We go, oh, wow, okay. I need the armor of God. You know, I really need to do this. So just a FYI, just a heads up. If things start, you know, when things are going along and finally it doesn't really make sense, this is kind of where I get to sometimes. I'm going along and all sorts of things start happening and it's just like weird. Like, how can all these things pile up on top of each other? And I'm like really a slow learner. But there are times where at the end of it, I go, oh, wow, this might be spiritual battle. This might be something bigger than just the one little pieces or a bunch of little pieces put together. There's something big going on here. Oh, okay. This is spiritual battle. So you might just be a heads up. If it starts piling up, be aware that there might be something bigger happening. Okay? So just be careful. All right, secondly, as you wrestle with spiritual conflict, you will need to remember that your power and your victory does not come from yourselves, but from the authority of Christ in your life. You see, you and I have no authority whatsoever. We don't have spiritual authority over the demonic world, over the world system, the flesh. That is not our authority. The authority is in Christ. It's his authority that we bank on. It's his authority that he gives to us, but it's still his authority, right? It's not us. On our own, we are weak and we will fall. But in his authority, we can live. The authority of Christ. When Christ, you guys, when Christ died on that cross, Satan was defeated. And he knew the end was down that road. He still is loose right now. But he knew, I'm going down. And I'll take as many people with me as I can. But it is the authority of Christ, not us. Okay? Last thought. Greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. 1 John 4:4. Greater is he who lives in you. You see, God is all-knowing. He is all-powerful. He is everything. Satan is not all-powerful. He is not all-knowing. He is powerful. He is real. And the whole system that he has authored is very real. But greater is he who lives in you than he who lives in the world. And you don't have to fear him. You need to be really respectful of that. But greater is Christ. That's the incredible thing. We live in victory. We live in his joy. We live in the reality of him, but not being ignorant of what's going on, but aware of it, but to live above it because of him. Because greater is he who lives in you than he who lives in the world. Right? Of course. And that's the incredible thing. And so as we talk about spiritual battle the rest of the summer, I think it'll be both interesting, challenging, fun, crazy, hard, sometimes disappointing, discouraging, because we're going to be aware of much more of what God's doing and what's going on, what the scriptures have to tell us, so that we can live very informed of all the situation. But I think probably we would be wise to pray. Without that, I think we would be foolish. Here's what I'd like us to do. I'd like to just have it be quiet for a few minutes and just to pray and prepare and ask God to meet you in the midst of this, right where you're at, and to meet our church, because I believe that God has something for us that's coming that's going to require that we be filled with the Spirit and we be ready to take on the spiritual battle, because I believe that God is doing something in this church to begin to reach this community. I spent a half an hour the other day, almost an hour, to tell you the truth, with one of the policemen in our area. And I was stunned at his discouragement. And I was stunned because he had said, you know, the things that are going on in this community, are the number of families that have incredible conflict or breakup, the profound rise in the suicide rate here in West County, was so discouraging to him. We know that the suicide rate has increased 30% among males, 25% among females. He said the outbreak of the heroin epidemic in this area is almost more than he wants to stomach. And there is an incredible evilness to that whole thing. And you think, wow, we can keep doing church, or we can dig into a culture that needs Christ. But it will come at a spiritual battle. And we have to reach out and reach up and let God do what he does, right? So let's pray. Father, listen to your people as they pour out their hearts and their own hurt and their own concerns and their own pain. Would you hear them and embrace them?